Hello and welcome to Radio 3's Arts and Ideas podcast, the best interviews and debates from Radio 3's flagship Arts and Ideas programme, Night Waves. This week, Isabella Hilton talks to Chilean novelist and matriarch Isabel Allende, who has returned to writing memoir for the first time since she wrote about the death of her daughter, Paula, in 1992. Isabella also explores the pleasures and politics of guerrilla gardening with Richard Reynolds, who first began his horticultural odyssey by planting a patch of earth outside his central London tower block and has become a passionate advocate of the movement.
The term guerrilla, as many of you will know, derives from the Peninsular War, when irregular forces of Spanish patriots harassed Napoleon's occupying armies. In the nearly 300 years since then, the guerrilla idea has taken on many shapes in many situations, but none as surprising as that of the guerrilla gardener. Richard Reynolds became a guerrilla gardener 4 years ago, when the miserable neglect of flower beds outside his tower block in London's Elephant and Castle first provoked him to action, gardening on land that was unquestionably not his. Now he's written a book on a movement that claims not only that its antecedents lie with the diggers, but that it is a worldwide phenomenon. But what does it look like in its present-day form? Earlier this week, I went to the Elephant and Castle to find out. A journey of discovery that began underground in a garage.
Yes, well, I don't think I've ever seen a car fuller of plants than the entire back of this car is crammed with lavender.
Absolutely. Well, we've got a big dig this evening. It's a new location up in North London, and I've just come back from the flower market at New Covent Garden. And this is a key part of what will be going in. Other troops will be bringing plants as well, but this is my contribution. Okay, so in this shopping trolley, squeezed into the back of my garage here, we have most of the tools. Now, I've learned the lesson not to buy any cheapy old fork or spade, because we're dealing with pretty tough locations. You don't know what you're going to unearth, normally lumps of concrete. And so this is good quality stainless steel equipment.
I mean, that's top of the range tools.
A beautiful implement, which we shove into old compost bags, and then they go in the back of the car. Or I've got troops who can actually tie this to the frame of their bicycle. They cycle around London like that.
And so what else do you take?
Well, this is brilliant. People have assumed this is some kind of bazooka or a peculiar old military equipment, but it's actually a Swiss Alpine plant collector's box, which I got in a junk shop.
Got this oblong metal box about two feet long. Yeah.
And inside is where we can then very conveniently stash all the hand tools. So there's about 30 trowels and forks and dibbers and all sorts in there. So that could go over a shoulder, and you never know how many people are going to turn up. I mean, we sometimes advertise our digs on the forum, word of mouth, and then hopefully encourage a few passers-by to join in as well. So we always bring extra. Somewhere amongst this mess is a bag of gardening gloves as well. And then above your head here we go.
Ah, a giant plastic water bottle.
Yeah, absolutely essential. A watering can is no good if you're lugging that around on a bicycle or in the car. But this can transport 20 litres of water there, watertight, and easy to lug.
Pretty heavy, though.
Yes, but that's all part of the benefit of gardening, really. It's a workout as well as a bit of beautification.
Well, this obviously has long-range possibilities, but you actually began just outside this building.
Yes.
Very warm here, actually. There's a nice heat coming off.
Really? Yeah.
Here we are, the Elephant and Castle, and a bear just outside the front door. I guess as you came and went every morning, you would see this bed.
Yes.
What triggered the action?
Well, I was actually ashamed to be walking past this, and for friends to be walking past this. Before I did any gardening here, it was a tangle of weeds, tired old shrubs, a lot of litter, and a lot of builder's rubble and grit from a recent building work. And I cleared it out, and that was the starting point.
So it's a raised brick bed, what, about 12 feet by maybe 10 feet by 8, something like that. So it's a substantial space, and it now looks rather lovely with sage and two little palm trees.
Yeah, you've got some cord line and Japanese anemone. It's rose and narcissi just finishing, and we've got a wisteria going up the back now as well, which I have grand ambitions for. There's a lot of height should it find its way. So to me, the simplest way of sorting it out was to just do it myself rather than trouble the authorities with permission or grants. I was quite happy to fund it myself. So I set the alarm clock for 2 a.m, as I was terrified that neighbours or the authorities would question me, and I wasn't quite sure how successful I'd be at this point anyway. So I thought, just do it discreetly and then hopefully it'll work out. And it's gone from there. I've added to it, taken the bits away, and didn't lose any plants.
But when the neighbours went by and suddenly this weed-strewn, neglected little bed had sprouted cyclamen and lavender and cordyline, what did they think? Did you think, the council's got round to it?
I know that most of them assumed the council had got round to it, and that was fine by me. I didn't leave any plaque saying what I'd done. I'd improved the garden, I'd enjoyed gardening, that was enough for me. But as time went by and I saw that the council weren't interrupting with my gardening, for them it was no difference than leaving weeds there, they were neglecting it. I got more confidence, and so I wasn't setting the alarm clock for the middle of the night. I was going out during the daytime, and it was at that point that I began to talk to residents, and they would immediately ask me, who are you doing this for? Who is paying you? Why are you doing this? And my simple answer was, well, I like gardening, I'm doing it for myself, and I'm doing it for you lot as well, and you're welcome to help out.
So having done this one, you moved on?
Yes, like a pioneer in the Wild West, I bit by bit moved across what is a far more intimidating and much more overgrown shrubbery, so that now virtually all of it is new planting. I've trained back and tamed some of the older, wilder stuff, but
right.
We now have a cascade of herbaceous and shrubbery plants.
As we look over the brick parapet, there is a whole series of raised beds with tulips just coming to the end of their lives, and some wallflowers, but also very well-established shrubs and the promise of lots of exciting things to come.
Each of these plants really has its own story, because it wasn't like a landscaping scheme where you flatten the whole lot and with your graphic design put a few blobs in and fill it all in. This was bit by bit, using the plants that I was given or happened to be at the market at the time. So the two hydrangeas come from Christine in Vauxhall, who was moving out of her flat. The lilac bush there was funded by a donation from someone in New Hampshire who said, here's £20, you must buy a lilac bush. Rhododendron comes from my father. The allium, they were just from the market. And the canna lilies round the corner were tiny little cuttings from my mum's garden in Devon, and they're now they're magnificent clumps.
It certainly doesn't look like a municipal bed.
No. I think it looks like a very amateurish herbaceous shrubbery, which I love, where thousands of people are walking past it every day. This is no even communal private garden. This is public flower beds. It's on the street. And people waiting for the buses sit along the brick walls around the edge and lap it all up.
And Richard Reynolds joins me now. Richard, you described there your beginnings as a guerrilla gardener, entirely spontaneous, ashamed of walking past those beds. When you come to write the book, you associate this this movement with the diggers, with many other historical movements and thoughts, including Mao Zedong. Was that post hoc rationalisation?
Absolutely. What happened was that I was really proud of what I'd achieved that evening, and I photographed it, and I began blogging it. And This is what happens. People email you, they come across your blog, they start telling you what they're doing, telling you about things that might inspire you. And it grew from there. And I'd never heard of the diggers when I began guerrilla gardening at all. But I read about their work, dug out their own pamphlets from the Bodleian Library, and realised there's a continuity here.
Of the idea that the land belongs to those who cultivate it.
Well, I wouldn't say it belongs to us, but there they were with neglected wilderness, common land. They were allowed to walk across it, but they weren't allowed to grow on it. And yet they had a need, and it, to them it seemed like the right, the just thing to do. And that is the same for me, but at a different scale.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a high moral case, but the guerrilla gardening is nevertheless a pretty broad church, and with all sorts of people in it, and some people, like you, are planting bulbs on roundabouts. Seems entirely benign activity. There was, though, that demonstration which resulted in a Mohican strip of turf on the head of Winston Churchill. There was the 1996 Reclaim the Streets, digging up of a motorway, planting a tree. Do you make any distinction? What are the boundaries, do you think, of as it were, legitimate, illegitimate activity?
Well, for me, the definition is about, is it really guerrilla activity, and is it really gardening? By which I mean, are they actually cultivating something? Or is the plant being used in a symbolic manner? Because plants come with a lot of positive associations, particularly in these days of, sort of increasingly environmental awareness. So the two examples you mentioned there, I don't really welcome into the broad guerrilla gardening church. Most guerrilla gardeners I meet don't identify with that, because there was no hope of any of that planting surviving more than a few hours. But it was being used to make a gesture, a point about other issues, in that instance about the occupation of roads by cars.
What about the other phenomenon you talk about, which is harvesting of other people's crops? I'm sure that, you know, many people have nicked the odd apple off a tree, but still, it is a question of boundaries, isn't it? I mean, that is theft.
Yeah, that would be theft. Though the harvesting of other people's fruit that I write about and commend as a form of, well, it's guerrilla harvesting. It's not guerrilla gardening. Are those trees growing in public, or trees growing on private land but hanging over into the streets frequently? People are probably familiar with the rotten apples and plums and cherries over the street. There are groups both in Sheffield and in Los Angeles that are going around in a very organised manner, mapping these locations and harvesting them, which I think is brilliant, and again seems the right thing to do if it's neglected.
What gives you the right to plant that flower bed rather than anyone else? Suppose another neighbour in the tower block had wanted a different scheme and had dug up your lavender and put in marigolds, or decided he wanted to grow vegetables, or, you know, when you breach the nominal ownership, do you not open up all sorts of dispute potential?
Definitely. There was a right near where I live, a tub. I'd had a go guerrilla gardening it. I'd failed on two counts because it was repeatedly being vandalised. So I retreated and planted something much more modest. A neighbour put a tree there and dug up all my plants. And to me, if you approach it by saying this is neglected land, and that's the starting point, and you do something with it, then, like the going into the Wild West, this is, it's open territory. It's a degree of first come, first served. And if you don't keep up the maintenance, if you aren't holding onto your ground, then fair game. If somebody's got is going to put more effort in, then they can have it. And in this instance, I worked out who this neighbour was. We now work together. He helps me out from time to time doing the pruning, and his enthusiasm has been channeled.
But you get through that situation, but you are entering a territory where there really aren't any rules. It could be trowels at dawn, surely.
In some ways, the measure of the success of guerrilla gardening would be turf warfare between local residents wanting to use the land around them intensively and having to try and find a way of working out and organising that. But to me, that would be a success. That really would be, because you would organise it, and this wouldn't be a case of then attacking neglected land. It would be a way of organising the cultivation of land that people had great demand of. Now, of course, guerrilla gardening doesn't just attack neglected land. There are guerrilla gardeners out there who are digging up immaculate lawns and putting things in them, and I have some sympathy with that, but it's not what I do or particularly encourage.
But one could see it becoming an element of class warfare. I mean, I could decide that the need for vegetables of you know, my neighbourhood could be satisfied by planting carrots in Kensington Gardens.
Yes, Yes, and give it a go. You might be able to do that. The Kensington Gardening Horticultural Contractors may not notice those carrots, and you may not be disrupting the display for anyone.
But what would you think about her?
Well, I would think better target some neglected land rather than some immaculate land that's already found another productive purpose. Because if you're attacking neglected land, the opportunity for dispute is far reduced. And, you know, it makes more sense. But, of course, the issue is land is a finite resource. If there's huge demand to make use of that land, then the debate is not going to be about who's looking after it. It's going to be about, well, what should we be actively doing with it? And my target is neglect. But side by side, it's the issue of scarcity.
Now, those beds that you showed me are now, as it were, your position vis-a-vis those beds is now legitimate. After a confrontation with the council, you've been given the right to cultivate those beds.
Yes.
Is that, in a way, the objective? Is it to legitimise guerrilla gardening, or do you feel this is perhaps a little too tame and you'd really rather move on?
Now, I was thrilled to get legitimisation there, but importantly for me, it was on my terms. And for a lot of guerrilla gardeners, the strategy is go out there, do it, show the potential in the landscape, also prove your commitment to it. There are plenty of dreamers out there who have visions for their landscape and local community but can't actually get it together. Go out there, do it. Now, if somebody wants to say, that's fine, carry on, that's fine by me. You're not a guerrilla gardener anymore, but you've won the war and you've hopefully won it on your terms. And in this particular instance, the area outside my block, had I asked permission before putting a trowel into the ground, I would not have been granted it. And that is what the council have told me.
Richard Reynolds, Guerrilla Gardening, is published by Bloomsbury. That's it for this week's Arts and Ideas podcast. But thank you for listening to this download from the BBC. If you want to hear the programme, you can tune into Night Waves on BBC Radio 3 from Monday to Thursday at 9:45. Goodbye.